How do you kill a werewolf? Tony, are you crazy? That's what you're saying right now. But today we're going to talk to a werewolf hunter. Maybe not a hunter as in setting a trap, but Charles Christian is seeking answers into the folklore of werewolves and actually many other mysterious and dark demons that lurk the earth. We're going to talk about the werewolf folklore, maybe even touch on dragons and zombies and who knows what's going to come up. But this techie turned werewolf hunter. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome the one and only to Truth Be Told, Charles Christian.
Hi there.
How are you, sir?
I am fine.
It's been a while since we've had somebody from the other side of the pond, as they say. So thank you for staying up. I'm sure it's pretty, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock there?
11 o'clock where I am, yeah.
All right. Well, unless you're a late nighter, you're probably not hitting you too hard. So, but thank you for being a part of Truth Be Told for the first time. We always like to welcome new people to our family. We're coming up on our 600th episode, so thank you for contributing to that. And throughout the podcast, if we have any great questions in the chat room, I might bring those up and ask you from the people that are listening. And for everybody listening, this is Charles Christian, and he has a website, and you can go to his website and look at all of his books, Urban Fantastic. How do you say that?
Urban Fantasist.
Oh, there we go. I've never even heard it that way, but good for you. and we're going to be talking about your book that it's all about werewolves and Yorkshire's weird. What's Warlds?
Wold. Now, a wold is a type of chalk uplands.
Got it.
And it weathers in a certain way and does mysterious things with water, which is why a lot of the folklore stems around it, because the water soaks through and then will suddenly pop up in a flood.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't use that word too often, so I thought I'd ask. Right. Well, tell us about your book. How did you get started in this book here?
Well, the area we're talking about is just short of where I grew up as a child, and had friends in that area who were lived in villages around there, and just picked up on some of the folklore and tales about it, and heard tales from my parents about it, and it all sort of lodged in there in the back of the brain box. And as time went by, I thought there's you don't really read much about this. There's an awful lot of fascinating stories, and the more I dug, the more intriguing tales I discovered, and the more intrigued I was by it. And so it all came together as a book a few years ago, and it's gone so well, I'm now working on a revised edition of it, which will be out sometime next year.
So tell us, I remember going back into my file cabinet in my brain of grandparents telling me and parents telling me either folklores or just stories. We called them stories, the 2 pound the 2 pound fish that turned into a 20 pound fish, and they just kept getting bigger and bigger. But what was that one folklore or one story that your family told you that really stood out, that just perked your interest?
Well, the one that got me was I grew up in the 50s, and one of the things you got as a kid, got dragged into doing, was being pushed in the back of the family car, and the family would go out for a drive in the countryside to visit stately homes or scenes of beauty or anything of that nature. And, you'd be... being so little, you'd be along as the passenger with no real say. And we were driving one day on a bit of road, returning home, and my mother happened to comment that during the war, this is the Second World War, some of her friends who were in the Women's Royal Army Corps, they drove trucks and things when men weren't available on the men were all fighting on the front line, so women were doing a lot of auxiliary work, and they were told that they didn't have to go past this particular house on this particular stretch of road at night because it was reported to be haunted, and they were allowed to go on a detour in a different area. And it struck me that, you know, the military, who you always get a view, are very straightforward, no nonsense, not only allowed it, but they allowed it at a time when there was fuel rationing, and so letting people take a long way around and add another 40 miles or so to their journey, that was a big deal. So it must have meant something to the people there, and that's what intrigued me.
Yeah, and same with me. Growing up in Kansas, you know, small country town, you know, we used to hear, you know, from haunted houses to ghost stories to one was actually, and I think you were talking about before we went on air, an ape-like man that, you know, walked upright. So, you know, it was a couple sightings like that around our area. So it's, I find it interesting that almost every society or every even region in America, Europe, or wherever you want to look has their own stories, and they continue, you know, they're never forgotten.
No, they get handed down, and you just remember things that people said to you, and you know, you may not even be conscious of them, then suddenly, you know, the light bulb goes off and you said, she said that, they said that, is that right? Or you go past the place where the story is meant to be told about, and it sort of brings it all back.
And where did werewolves come into the picture? I mean, haunted houses are one thing, but you don't hear haunted houses and werewolves usually together. I mean, we've seen them in Hollywood movies and a lot, but we've never really connect those two.
Yeah, well, I think the connection for me was the fact there was another tale told about the area I grew up in, and it was of a werewolf that roamed there many hundreds of years ago. And that was again intriguing because werewolves aren't a particular English folklore creature. They're big in Europe, particularly big in France and Germany. But until relatively recently, you didn't hear about them very much in the UK. And the only one was this particular werewolf called Old Stinker, because it had putrid breath.
I thought that was my grandpa.
exactly. And it had putrid breath. And it happened to be associated with a particular village, again, not very far from where I lived, and again, part of the what I now call the Wold Newton Triangle. So obviously that went into the mix of the story. And it was another of those things where, having heard that, then the more I dug, the more I found out about it. And actually, bizarrely, the more plausible the stories were that people of 1,000 years ago would possibly have seen something and thought, for them, quite reasonably, that it was a werewolf. You know, which you actually find with a lot of folklore, that deep down there is an element of truth. It's just that it was recorded in a non-scientific society. So superstition ruled rather than, you know, science. And it's then got glossed over the years and changed and expanded. And a bit like you were saying at the outset about, you know, the 2-pound fish became a 20-pound fish. And it all becomes a lot more frightening.
Just like vampires, we kind of know where the origination came from, you know, Vladimir or Vlad the Impaler.
The Impaler, yes.
Yeah, and so, but where did werewolves originally, like the first kind of that you could go back far enough to say this is kind of where we can point the finger to blame for the folklore of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, in Europe, it goes back a long time, almost to the Roman era. But in
Wow.
the UK, to say is the intriguing thing. And this particular werewolf, Old Stinker, his tale begins where the area where he was reputed to roam was at that time infested with wolves. The wolves, which comes from the book, are these high hills, and people kept sheep and cattle on there, and there were wolves up there. And when the winters struck, the wolves would come off the hills down into the valley and be scratting for food. They would be scratting up recently buried human bodies. And so the locals of the time, and we are talking 1,000 years ago, would be going past their village church and to their horror would find graves open and human bones scattered around, which they would naturally think was something demonic. They wouldn't think, oh, it's animals. And there was such a problem with wolves around there that a hostel was built specifically for travellers along that way so that overnight they could stay at the hostel rather than risk being attacked by wolves. So you've got a problem with wolves plaguing the population. And you've also got, again, we're talking non-scientific communities, they don't know anything about animal behavior. You've got people with wolves, and wolves work in a pack, and they seem to communicate with each other, and they can, hunt down their prey and corner their prey. So again, these animals were acting in an intelligent way that to the people of that time would think, well, there must be a human element in there. There's either some kind of human guiding them, or perhaps one of them maybe even is some kind of shapeshifter. So you've got all those factors there in, if you like, real life. And then 1066 and all that, the Norman conquest, shortly before the Normans came over, there was an invasion in this very part of Yorkshire by the Vikings, and they landed and they ransacked the place and they marched along the same road where this hostel was. Now, we all know from the TV series The Vikings
Right.
that there were berserkers there who would feel they were filled with the animal spirit and the courage of a bear, and they would go into battle wearing little armor, big sword, maybe a bear skin over them, thinking they were the spirit of the bear. And they were almost unstoppable fighting machines. But then there were also Vikings who believed that they were wolves, and they would go into battle wearing wolf skins. So imagine you're a peasant living down there. You've got wolves digging up your relatives out of the churchyard. You've got wolves prowling. And then this army of Vikings goes marching past
Wow.
with men who've just been in battle and burning down some of the local towns, smeared with smoke and blood and everything else, wearing wolf skins. Well, you'd think, well, is that a man or is it a wolf? You're not going to
Right.
go up and ask them and check it out. You're going to be cowering under your bed or in a barn, hiding from them, hoping they don't catch you. And I think that's where this tale began, that there were Vikings dressed as wolves and there were real wolves. And put them two and together, and remember we're talking 1,000 years ago
Right.
and a bit of superstition, and if you only need to take see what's happening today with conspiracy theories to see how people can be taken in or believe something which other people say, well, that's just nonsense. But
Right.
put yourself in their place. That's a werewolf gone past, half man, half wolf.
I always say that if Jesus came down today, nobody would believe him. Because nowadays with technology and things we see on, I remember in the 70s, we'd see somebody, actually get killed on camera or something. It was just almost grotesque. You know, we can't watch it. Nowadays, you just kind of like, oh, that's too bad. And you just go on about your day. So we've kind of been desensitized to anything to shock us.
Yeah. And I say, the society of that time had a very black and white existence. There was good, and then there was evil, and it was demonic, and it was bad, and it was terrifying, and there was hellfire. And you had nobody saying, no, that's not the case at all. The church was carrying this same argument through. And, you know, they would think we're being visited for our sins. These things are coming down on us. And, you know, they know nothing of science. They know nothing of animal behavior. They nothing else. That just these scary warriors,
right,
dressed as wolves.
So just like here in America, up in the Seattle, Oregon, is we hear about, you know, Bigfoots. Now, in England, what area, or is there an area that's most werewolf sightings? Is there a place, or I know you talk about the Wald Newton Triangle. Is that the place where most werewolves are being seen?
Well, for the purpose of my book, this is where the original sightings were. And I don't know if you can see on the map. There is a place called Spittle Hoe at the top left. That's, yep, Hoe as in house, I should. No, hospital as it was. And that was where the hostel to protect people from the wolves were. Uh-huh. And then just along the road was Flixton, where old Stinker the werewolf was said to lurk. And this was the area, and there were reports again in later centuries, in the 18th century, of a large wolf-like creature around there. And there were even reports in the mid-20th century. So this was the main area. Since the 1990s and the, I think it's really down to the internet, there have been reports of werewolves in other parts of the country. But I'm not sure whether they are genuine werewolves, I mean, genuine folklore, right, or whether it's sort of modern folklore, a bit like Slender Man, you know, that started out as a almost a joke on Creepypasta. And then people started to take it seriously and think it was a real monster. And I think that with later werewolf tales in England, that is the same thing. It's spread because there's so much talk about them on social media.
Well, I know you said not too far from there is where the UFOs were sighted. What was the name of the forest again?
That was where I live now. This is where we live now, not there. That's where I grew up. We're now down here in East Anglia, which is where I'm living now and where I am present. And yes, not far from here is Rendlesham.
Yes.
Where we had the sighting of the UFO 40 years ago, and it's very much pitched as the UK's Roswell. And
that's
the same thing, huge amounts of stories, largely prompted, I think, by the military clamping down and saying no comment and coming up with rather implausible cover stories, cover-ups, rather than being open. And if they'd be more open, I think the whole thing would have faded away.
I definitely want to ask you a little bit more about that in a little bit. But I do want to talk about, we, on Truth Be Told, we talk a lot about ley lines.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of interesting things that happen on ley lines or in between ley lines. Can you talk about werewolves or even any activity that we consider in paranormal that is happening with ley lines, especially in England?
Yeah. Well, I mean, can you bring up my little map again?
Yep, of course.
If you look on there, you will see a spot middle called Rudston.
I see it. Let me enlarge so people can see it.
Yeah. There you go. There in Rudston, which is a tiny village on the Yorkshire Wolds, and it actually has the tallest standing stone in the whole of the UK. It's actually taller in its present form than the tallest stones at Stonehenge. And archaeological digs have shown that there is as much of the stone below the ground as there is poking up. Now, all that area around there has got a lot of ancient burial mounds, earthworks. There's the picture of it indeed. It's in a churchyard. If people are wondering why the gravestones are next to it, this is a feature of the early Christian church. If you were wanting to deal with the locals who were already praying to a pagan god somewhere, you'd build your church next to that site, and say, you know, instead of praying to Odin, you're now praying to Jesus. You come to the same place on a Sunday, and instead of sacrificing your cattle, we'll have a feast day. So Rudston has very incongruous this huge monolith right next to a little English parish church. Now, all that area, there is signs that going back 4,000, 5,000 years,
wow,
it's been a kind of ritual landscape where people have been traveling there, they have been worshipping there, they've been doing rituals there, they've been doing competitions, you know, coming of age ceremonies for their young men there. It's been a major focal point for them. And Rudston is at one end of a ley line which stretches right down to the south coast of England. There's another ley line going off up through to the hills of Cumbria, where it crosses various other standing stones. There's another one that goes to the Isle of Skye. There are five separate ley lines running through it. And it just seems to be, it's sort of chicken on egg, but it seems to be the focal point of all the weirdness is this large standing stone. And I say, we have the werewolf just nearby. Plenty of ghost stories, plenty of strange reports over the centuries. In 1795, the largest meteorite ever seen in the UK, that's the one, the Wold Newton meteorite, came crashing down on a farm just nearby. There is a little river called the Gypsy Race, and it has been said to have magical powers because it's on chalk, and it's there all the time, but most of the time it's running underground. But when you've got very heavy rain, the aquifers underneath in the chalk hills fill up, and so the water bursts through. And so you can have a valley that's not had any rain in it for 20, any water in it for 20, 30 years, suddenly becomes a rushing torrent. And that runs through this whole area. So again, to a non-scientific people, this would be very mysterious. This would be something very strange. There are lots of burial mounds of quite clearly high status people, warriors, but from their grave goods, warriors, There's a lot of burials of chariots, complete with the horses and the chariot and the charioteer, sometimes with a few attendants. So again, huge amount of activity in this relatively unpopulated little corner. And I think they're all connected. The ley lines, you know, I know people have different views on ley lines, whether they are just coincidences, whether there really is something there, and there is some sort of magnetic power there. But for the people there who were building these things, again, this was a magical place. It's quite clear they traveled from considerable distances. The monolith at Rudston was clearly dragged a considerable distance, maybe as much as 40 miles, given its size. That was a big undertaking, and erected there. People were buried from all around there. Huge numbers of these tombs, these earth mounds, some of them very large, all around this one little spot.
Wow.
And I think, you know, there is a connection.
Well, they've said that the energy in a ley line is definitely higher than a lot of other parts of the world. Mm. So, I mean, there has to be something. And like you said, there's a lot of sightings on, you know, folklore of UFOs and Bigfoots and everything else. So there has to be some type of connection. Has to be.
Yeah.
Well, here, I remember one time, we always kind of refer back to UFOs, but I remember even Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, Richard Nixon, several people, they did tell their tales of seeing UFOs. But you're talking about, do you have any, you know, Her Majesty or kings or other people that maybe spotted werewolves in their times as reigning?
No.
No. Come on.
No.
They wouldn't admit it, right?
They wouldn't admit it. Yeah. They wouldn't admit it, not at all. No. You know, just as they won't admit there's problems in the royal family at the moment,
right.
They certainly wouldn't admit they've been abducted by aliens or anything like that in there, or that there's lizard blood running through their veins.
Right.
But just to go back to Rendlesham.
Yeah, please.
There is another ley line that runs through this part of the world called the St. Mary and St. Michael alignment. And this runs from the Norfolk coast straight across England and comes out at Land's End. And it runs through all the big centres, including Stonehenge and Silbury Hill and Avebury. And it's just masses of them. And it's probably the most famous ley line in the country. And it's set at such an angle that on May Day, which used to be Beltane, a festival going back to Celtic people, used to celebrate, you know, really the start of the summer. On May Day, the sun shines directly down this ley line. And of course, then just south of there, you've got Rendlesham with the UFO sighting. And around this area, we've got our own variety of Bigfoot called the Woodwose, which is sort of the wild man of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this creature has been reported over the years, just furtive sightings of something big and hairy, gorilla-like, running across a road on a country lane. And again, rather like the Wolds, this part of the country, East Anglia, is relatively thinly populated and agricultural and lots of woods. So there's plenty of places where creatures could survive and avoid humans and hunt and find game that they want to do. And so we've got these wood roses around there, and a lot of the churches, and we're talking medieval churches, maybe I think about 15 or 20 of them, they've got carvings of wood roses either supporting the font or over the gate, and they're, big hairy people we're holding a club, often fighting monsters. So again, there is this strong tradition of something down here. And again, is it a coincidence that there's a ley line
Right.
nearby? Is it a coincidence that the most important UFO sighting in the UK was down here? Again, lots of too many coincidences, if you like,
Is
for
this
it
the
to
is
be not to be a pattern. You've got the map indeed. Exactly.
Yeah, that's
The
That is amazing how that
Rendlesham's.
is that ley line is perfect. I mean, it's just perfect.
And I mean, in olden times, going back 10,000 years, just north of there was the limit of the last ice age in England. So that was the route. South of there, if you like, the ley line really was south of there, was habitable land. To the east of there used to be a land bridge to continental Europe. And so when the ice ages started receding, people from Europe, the southern part of Europe, the Mediterranean, they weren't affected by the ice age. They were moving north and back into this part of the world. And later still, down in the south west corner of the map, that was where tin was mined around there. And tin was the metal you added to copper to make bronze, which was one of the key, strategic technologies, if you like,
Right.
of 1,000 years BC, the Bronze Age. And traders coming in would travel the route of England, and the ley line, actually, you follow it. It's and all those places that are linked there, Avebury, Oliver's Castle, Barrow Mump, Cadbury, etc. All of those places were the route you would take to get to the tin mines, and then you would retrace your step. And obviously, if you go there in May, you've got the maximum of the good summer months and the long days to make your journey. Then you return, and then you either return to continental Europe over the old land bridge or to other parts of England. So, if you like, the ley line was effectively the highway of the day, with the ley line being the map. You didn't have sat nav, but you knew if you headed in that direction, you would get to the tin mines.
That's
So again,
amazing.
there's
That's a lot. I mean, that's so fast. I mean, just even stepping away from the werewolves for a second. I mean, this whole the ley line, there's so much history. You could have like 40 shows just talking about pretty much the history of every single one of those subjects in on that ley line. That's fascinating. Fascinating. Wow. Well, let's talk about getting back to werewolves a little bit, because I want to also talk about, if you don't mind, bringing dragons in a little, because to me, almost werewolves to me are almost like dragons, in a way, just happens to have wings and spits fire. Is there a similarity to dragons and werewolves?
I think, well, the thing that always intrigues me about dragons is, actually, unlike werewolves, is that pretty much every culture
Adam.
on the planet has some kind of dragon myth. The Aztecs had it, the Japanese had it, the Chinese had it. The Europeans had it. There's large lizardy flying creatures mentioned in African folklore, and obviously European folklore in English folklore is full of dragons, you know, with different sorts. And you still see it, you know, the flag of Wales has a dragon on it, big red dragon on it. Dragons are a thing, and again, it's that thing. Well, where did they come from? You know, there must be something, because there was no communications. It wasn't, there was no internet, and somebody in Japan would say, "Oh, there's they're talking about dragons in England." Nobody had that communication right. 1,000 years ago. So 2,000 years ago, where did they come from? So there's obviously some kind of connection, some kind of common cultural link, which means either once upon a time there really were dragons, or once upon a time there were things being found that people could only understand and interpret as dragons. So, you know, dinosaur bones,
right?
You found those, particularly some of the, well, you know, a Tyrannosaurus head or something like a Triceratops.
I'm sure it would scare him. I'm sure.
You're going to think, well, that ain't natural.
Right.
And there were creatures around, which again, a bit like the fish that becomes a 20-pound monster. Crocodiles, they're scary things, especially the big saltwater crocodiles.
Right.
They are huge, they're mysterious, terrifying. Armored creatures that people don't understand. There's lots of other things out there, you know, out in the Far East. You've got the Komodo dragon, which
right.
even has the word dragon in the name,
mm-hmm.
you know, and can kill people with its spit and its breath. It's got a sort of toxic, exudes a toxic spittle. So, you know, There were creatures there, you know, and people would have seen them, they'd have found these bones. I think it's a combination of those factors. And, you know, there's always the possibility that there were creatures that have since been hunted to extinction. Plenty of those in history that may have been even more dragon-like than we have now. I mean, it's quite clear, you know, that early man coexisted with saber-toothed tigers,
right.
coexisted with mammoths, things of that nature, lots of other large animals. Who knows what other creatures were out there that, you know, we've not discovered or not really put together and worked out what it was.
Well, I find it fascinating. We've talked in the last couple of years where there was a new human species discovered.
Oh.
There's always, you know, finding new civilizations and discovering new bones of a new type of dinosaur. So, and Atlantis, we've heard stories about that for thousands of years of Atlantis.
Oh.
And my thing is, I always ask people this. I say, you know, my grandpa told me stories and probably told you stories about something his grandpa, and, you know, but people seem to forget some of those stories. But some of these civilizations, they have the same story and they never even intertwined, you know, from South America
yeah.
to Egypt to Asia to Europe, Americas. I mean, a lot of the same stories. So for me, they didn't have the internet. They don't have a telephone. They didn't have anything but their memory and you know, hieroglyphs or petroglyphs or whatever you want to say. It's hard to believe that some of this stuff is not real when they've never even intertwined with each other, even if it was thousands of years. It's hard to believe something, you know, the 1,000 years kept going. Maybe one or two, but there's a lot of different things out there that are still
yeah.
present.
And the fact that the descriptions of the dragon are so similar
Real. Yes.
for every culture.
Exactly.
That's
All right,
not
so,
all of them
oh yeah, go ahead.
Fire, but you know, they're big winged lizardy things,
right?
That are very scary.
I mean, like I said, if I saw a big lizardy thing flying over me right now, I'd probably be scared too, because I'd be like, okay, what the hell was that? Well, we have just about less than about 10 minutes left. I do want to touch on this, and I want to hear your take on it. You may have done some research on it at all, but you know, we've talked about the ley lines and all that stuff and a mm-hmm. lot of activities of paranormal activity, but UFOs, we've got into an in-depth discussion once about Bigfoot and UFOs, the connection. A lot of times when you see a Bigfoot, or you have a lot of UFO sightings. The same mm-hmm. with werewolves. When there is a sighting, do they have a lot of UFO sightings in that area? And could these just be another creature, another species of aliens? What's your take on that?
I confess I haven't really thought about werewolves and Bigfoot being other types of aliens, but what I have found intriguing and I have looked at is that a lot of the old folk tales of fairy folk,
mm-hmm.
the fae, and what happens when you stand in a fairy ring, and the fact that they have people who are abducted by fairies, there's a constant line that you get a strange time disturbance, and you think you've only been gone for a short time, and then you come back again and you discover hours or days or years have elapsed. A lot of the tales that people toast to tell about fairies are now very similar to the tales people tell about encounters with aliens. And when people are abducted, the experience seems to last a long time, and then they get back and the time scales don't add up. It's either just a short
right.
time and nothing's happened, or it's a long time and they only thought it was a short time, and that things happened to them that were unpleasant. And the descriptions of a lot of aliens are like, talking about the greys, if you like, or you know, proverbial little green men,
mm-hmm.
They're slightly smaller than human beings, childlike creatures,
right?
Again, descriptions of fairy folk fall into the same category. They're slightly different. They're sort of humanoid but not humanoid. They're smaller, they've got different colored skin and the like, silvery skin, sometimes greeny skin. Again, are we actually seeing a continuation of the same thing, except up until the mid-20th century, people were being abducted by the fairies, and now it's the first thing people think is, it's aliens. Is
right.
it just the same phenomenon that's been going along? And
right.
maybe even were the tales of fairy folk in bygone times, were they actually aliens? You know, were they alien visitations? There's such a lot of similarity between the two of them. And I say, particularly this strange time thing that is always reported, that it always seems you think you've only been in a short time, it's been a very long time, or
right.
vice versa. And that I find particularly intriguing.
Yeah.
You know, is there something of that nature going on there?
Yeah, and because I remember a couple of years ago we had a guy from NASA on the show, and we were talking about, you know, the different worlds that are being discovered and galaxies, and he said, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was just, you know, a handful of planets that we really knew of, and then 10 years after was hundreds, and then 10 years after there was thousands, and he said now there's tens of thousands, and then he said another 2,000 years, there's going to be, you know, hundreds of thousands. He goes, so there's such an unlimited amounts of planets out there, and a percentage of those can sustain life. And And to anybody that says there's no other life out there is pretty ignorant to me, because you know, we're a planet in the middle of our solar system that everything has to be perfectly working together to keep us here on this planet. Everything, from our hearts to the atmosphere to the gravity to, you know, rain to whatever, just to keep us here on the planet. And it's hard to believe that there's no other creatures out there either. That's probably way older than us, way more advanced in technology. You know, like they talk about the lizard people. Maybe that was the dragons. You know, there's so many different there's so many different ways that we can spin this. But I find it fascinating. You know, you say fairy circles, they have crop circles. You know, there's just all kinds of things that you can, like you said, similarities in different cultures from thousands of years ago. I even say the Greek gods. It's like, how do you come up with you know, chariots in the sky and certain things that they would never, like, to me, there's a lot of things you can imagine, but sometimes you have to see it to imagine something bigger. So there has to be some truth to even the Greek gods that could have been the aliens. So
I'd say it's one of those things that we don't know the answers, and just because we don't know the answers doesn't mean it's all nonsense.
Right.
It's just that we don't know the answers,
right?
And we're finding stuff that we thought didn't exist. You know, the classic is the Celia count, the fish that everybody was sure had become extinct 20 million years ago, and they found them in the 1930s swimming off South Africa, and they're still finding them, and they're finding new species of them.
Right.
They're still there. And you know, the lake monsters,
right,
Loch Ness Monster being the classic one. It's probably not a plesiosaur, that's probably stretching it, but there could be other things that it is. And again, we just don't know. And you know, we live in a world where there aren't nice, simple answers. That's rubbish, nonsense, or that's the truth. This is the truth.
Right.
It's just a lot of stuff we don't know. And you know, scientists are very bad for wanting, you know, black and white world.
Right, that's true.
You can prove that's it, and anything else is just silly. It doesn't work that way. It's just a great lot of stuff we haven't discovered yet. We don't know. Even this stuff we don't know, we don't know.
Right. Until we do know. And,
we do know. We do know we don't know. You know, there's so much stuff out there. And we keep pushing the doors. I mean, you've got all this concept of quantum physics and warp, you know, black holes and warping in space-time, and you know, there's so much stuff going on there that's on the verge of, if you like, proper science, and what until relatively recently was science fiction, but is now starting to become true. And what we now call paranormal, really, it's a lot of it is just stuff that hasn't been proved in the laboratory, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's just that we haven't proved it to a scientific satisfaction.
Well, this folklore is, I don't think, ever going to go out of style. I think it's always it's what really, you know, started Truth Be Told, my show, is what always captivated me from, you know, like I said, the old stories and hearing people. We used to hear all the time people like, oh, I don't believe in that stuff. But one time there was this thing that happened to me. I mean, they don't believe in it, but it happened to them. They just don't want to admit it. You know, they whisper it to you or something like that. So it's fascinating too that the folklore and, like you said, quote paranormal world is always going to be there, because I think there's unlimited discoveries awaiting us.
Yes, definitely. I think that's it. The The truth be told, but not just yet because we haven't discovered it all.
Right. Well, tell everybody how to get your book.
Right, it's available on Amazon. Just look for Charles Christian. It's on Amazon.co.uk and on .com, and you can find it there with some other books. And I've got more new books coming out over the next couple of years. Visit my website, urbanfantasist.com, and you'll find everything about my books. And
Love it.
please get in touch if you want to chat about any of these things.
I love it. Well, very interesting. We'll have to have you back to talk about more, some more folklore. Like I said, that those subjects, you could have hours of discussion on that. But everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, share the show. If you have any questions for me or Charles, please reach out to us. Probably more Charles. He has more answers than I do. And like I said, I tell people all the time, listen, I'm being a little selfish. I'm always learning. This I started the show so I can learn, and I'm just hoping everybody else can learn along with me. And please subscribe to our podcast. Go, you can iHeart, Apple, Amazon, Spotify, all the outlets now. And like I said, we always appreciate you guys tuning in and being a part of the show. Until next time, I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Until next Friday, take care. Bye.